Everybody who came out. It's so wonderful to look out and see so many familiar faces. And it's a real pleasure and honor that I get to speak with you before Rosh Hashanah and hopefully share some words that will inspire all of us to grow. I'd like to also thank Shari Zion and Rabbi and Rebbetzin Hauer. It's always been a place that I always came to when I was growing up and after I came back to get inspiration and words of Torah, and it's a real testament to the leadership of the Rav and of the Shul that this has become a real Makom Torah, a place where all Torah can be learned, and there's an opportunity, there's a venue for that, and it shows a true commitment to Torah learning. I also would like to thank Andrea Shulman, and who leads Women's Institute of Torah, for providing this opportunity for us to learn Torah. There's not many communities that have an organization like WIT, and we're very fortunate that they bring Torah to our community on a regular basis so that we can all grow. So I'd like tonight, the title of the talk is Rosh Hashanah, the Power of Our Potential. And I'd like to talk a little bit about how do we approach Rosh Hashanah in a way so that it's meaningful for us. So for the past 11 years, I was the Rebbetzin in Rochester, New York. And at that time, it was very easy for me to feel connected to Rosh Hashanah. Around the 3 weeks, all I would start hearing about was how many drashos needed to be given between now and Sukkot. So there's generally 21 challahs, 22 challahs, depending on how many meals that you need, if it's a three-day yontif. And then based on the number of challahs is how many drashos need to be prepared. And then based on that, the conversations since the 3 weeks were always about Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. So I was very fortunate that I always felt prepared going into Rosh Hashanah because I was the test audience for many drashos. Then I moved here, and I think I began to relate to what many of us experience. There's between lunches and running to work and coming home and doing laundry, it's very hard to prepare what does it mean that Rosh Hashanah is coming. So I look across this audience, and I see some of the women here are going to be at home with their children and hoping not to kill them, and that is their kapara and their tshuva for Rosh Hashanah. Some of the women will be sitting in shul and trying not to evidently to be looking how many pages left while the chazan sings with a lot of passion and depth and emotion, but still our feet are hurting and we don't necessarily understand every word. And some of us may have life circumstances that create it, that make it very intense, that we understand that our life is on the line, and so Rosh Hashanah is a very intense experience. So how can I address all these different women so we come away feeling empowered and excited about Rosh Hashanah and prepared for Rosh Hashanah, rather than facing the day with trepidation, anxiety, and not knowing what is expected of us? So that's really what I'm going to try to do tonight. It's to prepare us, but to inspire us at the same time. Now, with the permission of a parent, wrote me a letter before the school year. I'm an administrator, and I'd like to just read the description of how she described Rosh Hashanah through the eyes of her daughter. And this is her words, not mine. During a recent casual conversation with her young daughter, I told her that she's a beautiful girl with such a good heart. She replied, "No, I'm not." When I asked her why, she said her mora said that if you do averos, you get black spots in your heart. Since sometimes she doesn't listen to mommy right away or is mean, then our heart has spots on it. In a similar vein, last year before Rosh Hashanah, I overheard a conversation between another daughter and a friend. She was expressing how scared she was for Rosh Hashanah. When we had some quiet time, I asked her to clarify why she found Rosh Hashanah frightening. She told me it is because all the bad things that would happen in the coming year were decided then. She had heard about a child who had been injured over the summer and decided that that had been decided on Rosh Hashanah. I asked if she knew that all the wonderful things also happen, get decided on Rosh Hashanah, the engagements, the babies, the lottery winners, and her response was very powerful. Now, this is not what we teach in school. I know that we teach in school how positive and how Rosh Hashanah is a time of tshuva, but many of us come to Rosh Hashanah with that same lens, with that same level of maturity. We feel overwhelmed, scared, inadequate. So the question is, if I feel this way, maybe it's because I was raised in Baltimore and the woman's from Baltimore. Maybe it's something about Baltimore. Maybe it's because I'm a woman and so all women feel this way. So when I was preparing for the shiur, I was going through some farshim, And I discovered that I'm not the only one, and this little girl is not the only one who feels overwhelmed and scared and fearful about Rosh Hashanah. It's a universal approach that we have when we approach the Yom HaDin. Rav Chassman describes this exact point when he's speaking about this upcoming week's parsha, Parshas Nitzavim and Vayelech. In Parshas Vayelech, it describes what happens right before Moshe Rabbeinu dies. So Moshe Rabbeinu is about to talk to Bnei Yisrael. He's talking to them the last 30 days of his life, and he's giving his final speech as Bnei Yisrael are about to enter into Eretz Yisrael, and he knows he's not going to bring them with him. So who is Moshe Rabbeinu? We all know Moshe Rabbeinu spoke face-to-face with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to, had a light shining from him. He had the Shekhinah coming that just shone from his face. His eyes never dimmed. He never got old. This was Moshe Rabbeinu. And who did he speak to? He spoke to the people whose food was dependent upon their spiritual level. If they did an Avera, their man came 5 feet extra. So they were able to every day judge whether or not they were close to Hashem or far. So for 40 years, you were dealing with people who were constantly spiritually elevating themselves. So what did the ultimate Navi say to these people to whom we can't even comprehend what it meant to live in a spiritual life with a spiritual awareness? So what do you think that he would say to them? What mussar would he give to them, knowing that their parents sinned and they had to wander in the desert for 40 years? What would he say on this final day of judgment? They're about to enter into Israel, and he knows he can't take them in. What does he say to them? He says the following: Chizku v'imsu, al tiru v'al taratzu mipnehem, ki Hashem lokecha hu hal holech imacha lo yarpecha v'lo yazvecha. Be strong, be courageous. Don't fear, don't be afraid. Hashem, your God, He's going with you. He will not fail you, and He will not leave you. From this pasuk, what do we learn? Rav Chassman points out. He says that Bnei Yisrael, the Dor Dea, the ultimate spiritually elevated individuals who achieved the level of being able to have HaKadosh Baruch Hu in their midst for 40 years, were frightened of their own inadequacies. And they were afraid of what the consequences of their actions would be. And so, what did Moshe Rabbeinu say to them? He said, what should we say to them? What do you say to a nation who's afraid? What do you say? We say to them, Chizku v'yemtzu. Be strong, be courageous. Recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with you, He cares about you, and He loves you. So with that, I think I can sit down. I've now given over the message that I just say, be courageous. But somehow, that's going to fall short. So what was the fear? What did the Dor Dea have that made them so afraid? So the Rav Chassman says that they were saying to themselves, Masai yagi'u ma'asai l'ma'asei avasai. When will my actions, when will I ever reach the potential of my forefathers? Their parents had come out of Mitzrayim. They had seen B'net Matan Torah, and they sinned. So this nation who's about to enter into Eretz Yisrael are saying to themselves, if they failed, what about me? So we can all relate to this. We are all at a generation where there are challenges that were never faced before in history. And we can look at our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, and say, Masai yagiu ma'asai l'ma'asei avasai. None of us are perfect. Adam in ba'aretz asher ya'ase tov lo yechta. There is no person who has never failed. So for this reason, for this evening, I'd like to set a positive tone. I'd like to focus on both components that we need in order to approach Rosh Hashanah. The first is going to be Masai Yagi'u Masai L'Masai Avosai. I'd like to set a vision of who we can become so that we have aspirations. So that when we have those aspirations, though, we don't then come to depression. We don't come to feeling that we're inadequate. We can recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to cheer us on Chizku V'Imtzu. So that's going to be, it's going to be a balanced talk where I'm going to speak about both halves. Okay. The next theme, before I get to the meat and potatoes, which is going to be about women in Tanakh related to Rosh Hashanah, I'd like also to emphasize another theme from this upcoming Parsha. So we're lucky we have two Parshios. It's in Tzavim and Vayelech, so I get to pick one, something from one Parsha, something from the other Parsha. So I spoke a little bit about what's in Vayelech, and now I'm going back to Nitzavim. So what is Nitzavim about? So Nitzavim is a parsha where Bnei Yisrael are all gathered together. They're standing, they're about to be entered into a final bris, into a final treaty with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Moshe Rabbeinu recreates the Har Sinai experience. He brings men, women, and children, and he's giving over a message of how they will survive in Eretz Yisrael. And the message he gives to them is he says that every Jew will be responsible for one another. That up until this point, each Jew was only responsible for their own spiritual growth. But once they enter into Eretz Yisrael, every Jew now will be held accountable for the actions of their neighbor if they are aware of what their neighbor is doing. Moshe Rabbeinu then tells them what are the consequences if they are not held accountable. Bnei Yisrael, if they don't follow the words of Hashem, are going to be sent into Galus. And when they are sent into Galus, there will be times of travail, and they'll come back and they'll realize that they are far from Hashem. And Hashem promises us that when we recognize that things aren't going well, we're going to do tshuva. And once we begin to do tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring us close. We're going to do even more tshuva because we're going to want to be close to Hashem. Hashem is going to remove all barriers. We're going to do tshuva again. Mashiach will come and we'll enter into the era of Olam Haba. At this point, Moshe Rabbeinu says, there's a mitzvah that I'm giving you. So some Rishonim say this mitzvah that's going to help us in this process is the mitzvah of learning Torah. But many Rishonim say that the mitzvah that's discussed about what's going to help us get through this process of Galus and come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the mitzvah of tshuva. So now, if we look at Rabbeinu Yonah, if you talk to and most of us, we would say, how many steps are there for tshuva? There are three steps. There's, and probably somebody who's been in school long before me, I hope I'm getting this right, there's charata, azivas, vidoy, charata, azivas, achet. A person has to admit they're wrong, they have to regret what they're doing, and they have to make a commitment how they're not going to make that mistake in the future. Once that happens, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgives them. That's the basic understanding that we have. But if we look at Rabbeinu Yonah, according to the Sifsei Chaim, he says there are not just three stages of tshuva. In fact, there are 20 stages of tshuva. And he says that, so when we hear this, we say 20 stages, okay, I just described how I'm sitting, we're all cooking for Yantif. We all want to do tshuva, we want to come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But 20 stages of tshuva, how are we supposed to do tshuva? Some of us might have a lot of knowledge that we can fall back on, or some of us are teaching, that we can say, okay, I understand what it means to do tshuva. I understand how to grow. I understand. We might have relatives or friends who know how to share that perfect inspirational thought that will inspire us. But most of us don't have that. So how are we supposed to do tshuva? We say, if only my friends were more spiritual. If only my job were more interesting. If the baby was quiet, the teenager was respectful, my husband was more learned, the in-laws were healthy. If only everything was going right, then I would be able to do tshuva. But the pasuk gives us a very different message. It says, "Ki hamitzvah hazos asher anochi mitzavcha hayom, this mitzvah that I'm giving to you today, lo nifleis himimcha, it's not too far from you, it's not too hard, lo vashamayim hi, it's not in heaven." We don't need a Moshe Rabbeinu to go up to Shemayim and bring back the perfect recipe for how we're going to improve this Rosh Hashanah. Lo me'evar hayam. We don't need a Yonah Hanavi who's going to go and tell us, as the Targum Yerushalmi says, tell us the formula for how we come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ki korov yelecha davar ma'od. This thing, this ability to do tshuva, beficha ubalvecha v'lasoso, it's within us. All we need to do is to be able to say it, we need to be able to feel it, and we can do it. So, these are the messages that tonight we're going to explore more. Is number one, we need aspirations. We need to have role models who we can reach. Number two, Hashem wants us to do our best. He's not going to abandon us. He's not going to say, nope, sorry, failure, you're out of here. He's not going to fail us. And number three, we all have the potential to do it. We can all do it. So the best way, I think, for us to really internalize these messages of Rosh Hashanah and how to approach Rosh Hashanah is to look at five personalities who are tied to Rosh Hashanah and whom we discuss on Rosh Hashanah. Now, many of us might say, who are the personalities who we would assume are mentioned on Rosh Hashanah? Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, those are Moshe Rabbeinu. We talk a lot about Akedas Yitzchak, but I'd like to focus on some other personalities who are discussed in a very subtle way, but who are very powerfully telling us how do we achieve what we need to on Rosh Hashanah. So those are The women are the four imahos, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, who are all mentioned in Rosh Hashanah, as well as the story of Chana. So just a little bit of detour, another detour, and then we'll get into the meat and potatoes of learning about these women, is how do we approach learning about the imahos? How do we approach learning about women from Tanakh? So when I was writing, I started to write a book many years ago, and it's what just got published, and I was looking at the difference. I was learning Eshes Chayil, and I was reading through Mishlei. I also, at the same time, was learning with a friend Mishlei, and the difference, the juxtaposition of the beginning of Mishlei, which is what Shlomo Melch is talking, and the end of Mishlei, which is describing this Eshes Chayil, this woman, the ideal woman, couldn't be any more different. So in the beginning of Mishlei, you had Shlomo HaMelech describe giving direct mussar. You should not be evil. If you do, it will be terrible. Do not talk badly. Do not make bad friends. Everything was a direct command, negative, written in the negative. When you turn to Eshes Chayil, it doesn't say, do not do this, do that. It's descriptive. Her husband trusts in her. She opens her mouth with wisdom. Everything is just a description of a woman. And there's no direction given. Also, all the psukim in Eshes Chayil, in contrast to Mishlei, are written in the positive. So when I learned that, I took a step back and I said, okay, Eshes Chayil are psukim that are directed to women. So it's obviously giving me a message about how I'm supposed to learn about women in Tanakh. And what I found was that, indeed, many svarim are written for men. They're written in a very striking, and I don't want to make stereotypes, but I just did, but they're written in a very striking, straight, direct way. Do this, don't do that. And that doesn't necessarily speak to me. Because very often, if you have a difference between teaching in a class, I taught it boys and I taught girls. When you teach boys, you need to say, do not jump out the window or else you're going to the principal. When you teach girls, all you say is, honey, do you mind sitting down? And if you don't smile in the right way, the girl feels very, very, very sad. So that distinction also applies to how we learn about the women in Tanakh. The women in Tanakh are, when we look at Eshes Chayil, it's going to be in a positive way. The Eshes Chayil also has a medrash that's connected to it. Each pasuk of Eshes Chayil describes one woman in Tanakh. And the way the medrash does it is very similar. It describes a woman, and it just says a pasuk from her story. And that pasuk is about a story that's only positive. It tells us about that Rivka did chesed. It tells us about that Shimshon's mother sacrificed for him. It tells us about Ruth, how she came close to Hashem. It's a story, it's positive, and it allows us a sense that we can grow. It allows us to have positive incremental growth. So it's not a coincidence that the stories of Rosh Hashanah are all about women who will allow us, and there's from the stories that will allow us to grow and become close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a positive way. So when we're looking at the stories of Rosh Hashanah, these will give us that aspirations of Masai Yagiu, Masai Lamasai Yavosai. How will I grow to become like my forefathers? It will give us a sense of who we can become. So when we're learning about the Imahos, it's important to remember this. They were women who achieved tremendously high spiritual levels. And we can only use them as a vision, when will I come to them, and not, I should be like them. Because if we set up the imahos as I start to describe their stories, if we start to look at them as, I should be like them, we'll have negated the whole purpose of learning about them. We need to look at them as, when will I be like them, as opposed to, I should have been like them last year. So now, who are these women? So on each day of Rosh Hashanah, we read from a section of the Torah, and we also read the Haftorah. Each of those discuss the women that we're going to be discussing tonight. So the first Torah laning is about Sarah Imenu. Sarah Imenu is 9 years old. She doesn't have a child. And then Hashem remembers her and allows her to have a child on Rosh Hashanah. The next psukim that we read on Rosh Hashanah is all about how Sarah made a party for Yitzchak when he was 2 years old. He was weaned. Then Sarah notices that Yishmael, Avraham's son, who is from Hagar, is acting in a way that is dangerous spiritually and physically to Yitzchak. She approaches Avram Avinu and she says, Garesha sa'am hazos ve'espina, throw out this woman, expel this woman and this child. Avram Avinu is a man who is very connected to Chesed. He is a man who his whole life is bringing people close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through positivity and warmth. And he's being asked to expel his son from his home without giving him any supports. So he goes to Hashem and he says, am I really supposed to do this? Is this really what's expected of me? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to him and says, Kol asher tomer lecha Sarah shma v'kola. Everything that Sarah tells you to do, you need to do. Then finally, we see that Yishmael is sent away. He's wandering in the desert. Hashem, Hagar puts him aside. She's crying. She's weeping. Yishmael cries out to Hashem. Hashem looks at him, and he doesn't abandon Yishmael, even though he's in the future going to be a Rasha. And he brings him back to, he heals him. He was very sick. Yishmael is healed. He survives. So there are a number of reasons we read this on Rosh Hashanah that are obvious. Number one is the story of Sarah. Sarah was remembered on Rosh Hashanah. We're hoping HaKadosh Baruch Hu always remembers us for good on Rosh Hashanah. The second is that we all hope that just like Yishmael was judged for now and not for his future actions, we should be also judged on Rosh Hashanah based on who we are at that moment. We're doing tshuva now, let's do tshuva now. But there's another part of the story that I'd like to learn from. When Avraham says to Hashem, should I listen to her? Hashem says, yes, you should listen to her. Everything she says, listen to her voice. Now, I would love if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would come to my husband and say, everything your wife says, listen to her, because that would just make my life entirely much easier. But I don't think that's happening, because there's a big difference between me and Sarah. Sarah was a Navi. And Rashi says she was a Navi that was even greater than Avram Avinu, who we know Avram Avinu was pretty high level himself. So Sarah was a greater Navi, and because she had Nevuah, because she had that Ruach HaKodesh, Hashem was speaking through her, Avram could listen to everything she said. So that's something that we have to pause and think, I'd love if people would listen to me. I'd love if I could give an opinion to my friends, my husband, my children, and they would actually pay attention to what I say instead of ignoring me. So how do I get there? How do I get to the point where people want to listen to my advice as opposed to finding me annoying because I'm giving too much advice? So how do we make that work? I think the answer is for us to be taken seriously, we need to act a little bit like Sarah Imenu. If we and all the women here, I think this is an easy way to start the Musar component a little bit because we're all here. If we want to be taken seriously by others in terms of what we have, we need to be connected to something that is truer than ourselves. We need to have a source that we're relying on that's much better than, I have an opinion because I have an opinion. When we learn, when we bring some spirituality and Torah into our lives, our opinions then are formed by that lens. And we then have what to share that is worthwhile. It's very easy to come up with ways to bring that into our lives very easily. I have very good friends, Sarah Atensasser, who started a wonderful group when there was a tragedy with one of my classmates' husbands was Nifter at a very young age. And so she began a group on WhatsApp where she sends out a short lesson from the book Living Emunah on a Daily Basis. The days when I listened to those messages, my perspective and my ability to interact with my husband and my children is very, very different. I'm able to act and give advice much more like Sarah Imenu than like Shira Hochheimer. When it's coming from Shira Hochheimer, everybody knows it and they don't want, and I don't have much to add. But when I bring another source, when I bring that level of Nevuah, of the Torah, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to me, and I can then rely on that, I'm able to be much more wise and have more clarity. So that would be goal number one that I would set from Masai Yagiyu Masai L'Masai Avosai. When I read the story of Sarah on the first day, how do I achieve what Sarah achieved? We can think to ourselves, how am I going to bring spirituality into my life on a regular basis? How am I going to bring the truth of the Torah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu into what I do so that what I say and how I act has a basis and foundation of truth? On the second day, we read of Akedas Yitzchak. So Akedas Yitzchak, the story is a well-known story. It's a well-known part of the Torah. We have Avram and Yitzchak are journeying together, and they're going up to Har HaMoriah, and Yitzhak and Avram are both dedicated and devoted to being taken to sacrifice, that Avram is going to sacrifice Yitzhak as a karbon. And this was, again, a test of Yitzhak's devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We see the themes of Rosh Hashanah clearly throughout this Torah reading. We see that Avinu is willing to subjugate his own sense of what is right and wrong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's telling him to do something that goes against his intellectual and spiritual understanding of the world. We see that we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to remember what Yitzchak did in the shofar at the end of the story of the Akedah, where there's a ram that's tied up in the bushes, and they use that ram, and he's stuck by his shofar. So we see the themes of Rosh Hashanah are very clear in this story. But it doesn't end with the laning that we read on Rosh Hashanah does not end with the story of Yitzchak leaving to go to learn. It ends, it says, Achar hadvarim ha'ela, after these things. And it goes and it tells us about a family where they have 8 sons, and their names are Kmuel, Buz, Utz, Yidlof, Pildesh, and Besuel. And Besuel has a daughter named Rivka, and he has 4 sons who are through a Pelegesh, and it names them as well. So Rivka is mentioned on Rosh Hashanah. What is the lesson we're meant to learn through this mentioning of Rivka on Rosh Hashanah? What is the connection that we see to the Akedas Yitzchak? The Torah Shlema says that had Yitzchak not been able to achieve the greatness he did at the Akedah, Rivka would never have been born. That Rivka's greatness, she was only able to be born as a partner to Yitzchak because he was able to become Yitzchak Avinu at the Akedah. So what's our lesson? Why is this mentioned on Rosh Hashanah? Why is it connected to the Parsha at all? So we look at the Rivka's family. They have a bunch of names. There's Kmuel, which means her uncle's name is Kmuel, he rose up against God, which the Mefarshim say could be Bilam, could be Lavan. Not a really nice guy. The Shari Aaron quotes all the other brothers and says, the Rav Ephraim says, each of the brothers' names indicate how evil they were. So Rivka had 8 evil uncles, actually 7 evil uncles, and we know that her father wasn't a nice guy also. He was the one who wanted to poison Eliezer when he came to visit. So Rivka is being raised with a lot of evil guys around her. And her half-brothers, each one of them's name is because they each wanted to rebel against Hashem. So as we're sitting there, and either we're sitting in shul or sitting at home looking at the laning, and we read these 8 names, it's supposed to trigger us and make us think, this woman, this Rivka, is 3 years old, and she's surrounded by people whose values are corrupt, immoral, and evil. And Lavan, we see that her own brother, many years later, that when Yaakov Avinu comes to escape from Esav, her son, Yaakov Avinu runs to the house of Lavan, and Lavan comes out, and he hugs him, and he kisses him, and he only does that because he wants to see if he has money. And when he was determined that there's no money, we say every Pesach, Arami Ovid Avi, he wanted to destroy Yaakov. So Lavan, Rivka, everywhere she turns, none of us can say that we're in an environment that was as bad as Rivka Imenu. So how did Rivka survive? How did she become one of the Imahos? She, of all people, could have said, if only I had better parents, if only I had some place to go that I could be inspired, if only I had better siblings, if only. She had the most excuses of why she did not need to achieve anything in her life. Instead, what did she do? A stranger comes to her town and asks her for water. And she says, I will not only give you water, I will give all your camels water. Rivka did not have opportunities to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in many ways. And yet, she looked for opportunities whenever they presented themselves to her. She was ready and willing and able to see somebody come to her town and say, how can I improve myself given the corruption and immorality that is surrounding me and is smothering me? And so this is the lesson that we can take from Rivka Imenu, that second woman who's mentioned in Rosh Hashanah on the second day. That we are not tied to our environment. We are not tied to the people around us. Our opportunities of who we can become is independent of all circumstances we find ourselves in. We don't need to, we can have expectations of ourselves that are just that we can do more than I did yesterday. If we can say, I know I'm not going to be able to become the greatest person in the world, if at least I can become a little better than I was yesterday, because that's, I know that's all I have the capacity to do, I know that's the only the environment I have, we can become like Rivka Imenu. So there was one story that when I heard this story, it really struck me. And I think it's a famous story because I read it so much because it was very inspirational for me. There's a book out by Art School called Rebbetzin Knievsky, and in it it describes what Rebbetzin Knievsky was like when she was a young mother. So there was a neighbor who she noticed was coming home from yeshiva 45 minutes early because he didn't have babysitting. And babysitting is sort of like carpool in Baltimore, right? Babysitting Eretz Yisrael. It's hard to find. Everybody's machbid. If you don't get it, 3 years in advance, you're out. So we saw this man coming home from yeshiva. She saw this man coming home from yeshiva 45 minutes early to watch his children. And I think it says in the book, but I'm probably making this up, that to save money. So she said, I'm home with my kids anyways. Why don't you just leave your children with me? So now that really struck me. Because later, at the end of this book about Rebbetzin Knievsky, we see that she has like her refrigerator is emptied out on a regular basis by people who have mental illness. She has people living in our home. She gives away her food. She gives away her time. And yet that's not what it says about her when she was 30 years old. I don't know if she's probably in her 20s or in her early 30s. It says that she offered to babysit daily for somebody else. So to me, that was a real lesson, because right now, I'm not giving away my refrigerator to somebody. But if somebody needs an extra carpool drive, I can be like Rebbetzin Knievsky, and I will be led on the path to become like Rivka Imenu. Rivka Imenu gave a little water today, and the next day she was able to become the wife of Yitzchak. And that's all we need to have as an expectation of ourselves, is when I'm in a supermarket, do I put the shopping cart away, or do I leave it in the middle so it rolls into somebody's car? Do I gesture to the kid in the street, do I want out of the way, or do I smile and be polite? Those things are daily choices that we can make that are independent of those people who are around us. Okay. There's the third woman. The third and fourth woman are mentioned in the Haftorah of the second day. It's the story of Galus, and Bnei Yisrael are about to be led out during the first Galus, they're about to be led out to Babel. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yirmiyahu and Navi, and the Medrash says, go and raise my children and have them cry out to me. And Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov come to Hashem and they cry out, and Hashem says, I'm sorry, your children are going into Galus. And then Rachel comes to Hashem, and Rachel says to Hashem, am I any better than you? Am I better than you that I'm able to deal with a rival and you're not? Your children are serving sticks and stones, but I had a rival. I gave up my husband I let my sister Leah marry Yaakov. And I didn't get jealous. I gave up the signs and allowed that to happen, that Rachel allowed Leah to marry Yaakov without embarrassing her. And Hashem said, because of that, your children will return home, and in that merit, they will not be lost in Galus. So I heard a story recently that really taught me what does it mean to be Rachel Imenu in our days. So there was a grandmother of a friend of mine. His name was Mr. Stern. He was a diamond merchant, and this was a true story, but I heard it from his grandmother. He was a diamond merchant, and he had a very valuable diamond, and he was showing it in a showroom to this man, this individual, who was supposed to be trustworthy. He was obviously Jewish. And he left him alone in his showroom alone for a few minutes with this diamond. And when he returned to the showroom, the diamond was gone, the man was gone. And Mr. Stern was left with a pile of debts, and he didn't know what to do. And so he said to his wife, I'm not making another Jew go to jail. I'm not involving the police. I don't know what his story is. We're moving to South Africa so I can recoup my losses. And we're just going to not tell anybody why we're doing this, but we're going to do it because I don't want to hurt another Jew. I don't want my desire for money to outweigh my sensitivity that another Jew should not be hurt. And so the family moved to South Africa. The husband and wife moved to South Africa. This friend of mine's mother was a 10th grader at the time, and she had to stay with a married sibling. And 5 years later, the family, the parents were able to earn enough money to move back. And they didn't tell anybody for years until the grandfather died. The grandmother told the grandchild what had happened and why the family had moved, why the parents had moved to South Africa without telling their children, without telling the grandchildren, why they were abandoning them at a time when there were no phones, there was no email, there was no internet, there was no way to communicate. And the reason was, is that they did not want to embarrass and hurt another Jew. So that level, and this family is the grandmother, grandfather of Tova Wenger, who teaches in Beis Yaakov. And I heard it from her that her family, her grandparents, were very simple Jews. And each one of their children is a Rosh Hashiva, is involved in Torah, and achieved great levels of in Ruchnius development that would not have been expected from them. So now, I'm not sure, when I first heard this story, and before I heard that it was actually somebody I know's grandparents, I was sort of cynical. Like, really? I'm expected not to embarrass somebody else and move to halfway around the world so I won't embarrass them. That actually happened in our day. How's that even possible? That's not something that I felt or I feel that I could even share without some... I got a little, is that even a good lesson? I was cynical, but I think I can reach halfway. When somebody says something to me, which I don't think is so smart, I cannot smirk. I think that's something I can do. When somebody says something to me which I disagree with, I don't need to be judgmental. I can choose to be accepting. I can choose to listen patiently. I can choose not to make somebody else feel inadequate because of their decisions or their dress or the way they behave or the way they act. That is something that I can do that can help me become more like Rachel Imenu. So the last of there were four Imahus mentioned. So who is the last of the Imahus mentioned? The last of the Imahus mentioned is Leah. Leah is mentioned, but she's not really mentioned. But if you think about the story where Yaakov Avinu is about to marry Rachel, and Rachel gives the signs to Leah. Leah's right there. But we never hear about Leah. We never think about Leah. The fact that Leah is really not even mentioned, but she's really half the story. What are we supposed to learn from Leah? She was the mother of Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun. She had 6 out of the 12 Shvatim. Her children became the spiritual leaders, the political leaders of Klal Yisrael. Yehuda became the king. Her son Levi had the Kahuna and the Leviya come from him. We had Yisachar who became the Talmidei Chacham. They were the scholars of the nation. So what about Leah? Where does Leah fit into the story? How come Leah did all this? What are we supposed to learn from Leah in her not being mentioned in the story of Rosh Hashanah, in our leaning in Rosh Hashanah, where it only talks about Rachel? So I think it's important to think about Leah a little bit because she is so hidden. And each of us, in some ways, are hidden as well. We're not doing public actions where people are going to, remember, oh yes, Rachel sacrificed, but what did Leah do? What brought Leah to have the zechuyos that she did, that she could have the 6 out of the 12 shvatim? So Rashi tells us that for many years, Leah was told by all the neighbors, all her friends, it's so cute. You won't believe it, how adorable this is. Did you hear? Your aunt and your uncle had twins, and you and Leah are twins. It's adorable. The older will marry the older, Esau will marry Leah, and the younger will marry the younger, Rachel will marry Yaakov. And her whole time growing up, all she heard was, it's fate, it's meant to be. You are going to marry Esau. Yes, he's a Rasha, but your father's a Rasha, your uncle's a Rasha, Rishon, your grandfather was a Rasha. It's great. He fits right into the family. Leah was, it was beautiful. Leah, you're gonna be really comfortable with this shidduch. And for years, everybody kept on saying to her, this is the way it's gonna be. And she didn't really have a choice. This is what was going to be. Everybody said it. And so she started to daven, and she started to cry, and her eyes became weak from the tears of her crying to Hashem to let her not marry Esav. And Hashem offered her a way out. Lavan, last minute, says, okay, Leah, you're marrying Yaakov. And it was according to them, nobody faults Leah for taking this opportunity to marry Yaakov, whether it was forced by Lavan or Leah was involved. She's not faulted for this. But it says that right after her marriage, Yaakov, it says that Leah was davening to Hashem because kisnua, she was hated. Either Yaakov felt that she was participated, and according to the Medrash, he said, "You're a Ramai Bas Ramai, you really do fit into your family. Your families are tricksters, your family are corrupt, and you're corrupt." Or, just as painful, the whole town who used to look at her as Leah the Tzadekis, Leah who could daven Shemona Esrei like nobody else could, all of a sudden said, "Did you hear what Leah just did to her sister? Can you believe it? I can't believe it. I never would have thought that would come from Leah. Wow." And all these people who used to treat her with respect stopped talking to her. And she became the outcast of her whole community, according to another Medrash. And so Leah had to face and live a life where nobody knew why she did what she did. Nobody knew it was the right thing, but everybody treated her poorly. And yet, she continued to want to do what was right. She continued to want to bring more shvatim down into this world. She wanted to have shevet after shevet. And she, even when she had four shvatim, and she realized that she wasn't having children, Rachel wasn't having children, Rachel gave Bilhah to Yaakov, and Bilhah had two children, she said, "I know. Why don't I give my maidservant, Zilpah, to Yaakov, and Yaakov will have another wife?" Why did she do that? She did that because her motivation wasn't what people would say, but what's the next right thing to do? And that was why Leah is not really mentioned here, but she's a very important person to think about on Rosh Hashanah. That when things are not going our way, when we don't know what other people are saying or thinking, and we do what's right, we are acting like Leah Imenu. So these are the lessons of the Imahos that we got from the Haftorah, the two Torah leanings in Haftorah. From Sarah, we learned that we should connect spiritually to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. From Rivka, we learned to do the next right thing, independent of our family and our circumstances. From Rachel, we need to be prepared to make somebody else's feelings and emotions our top priority above our own comfort. And from Leah, we need to do what's right, even though we won't win the popularity contests. We need to make it our driving mission of why we're here and put ourselves completely in and devote ourselves entirely to the cause. So as I said, the Imahos have set a standard that is very hard to meet. I took what their lessons were and I boiled it down and down and down until it was I could take some taste that I could at some point come to the level of the Imahos. So that was the Masai Yagiu, Masai Lamasai of Asai. That was the how am I going to become, when am I going to become like the Imahos? That was to give us expectations so we can now feel a pressure to become greater than ourselves. But as I said at the beginning, we need to chizku v'imtzu. We need to be strengthened and realize that Hashem loves us. So where are we going to get that message from the stories that are read on Rosh Hashanah? The final story that I'd like to discuss is the story of Chana, who is the first Haftorah that's mentioned, that's read on Rosh Hashanah. So the story of Chana is a very sad and happy story at the same time. We have the story of Chana. Elkanah, she's married to Elkanah for 10 years. And Elkanah has another wife who has 10 children. And every year, they travel as a family. And Elkanah goes around the countryside and it is Mikariv and it brings close all these Jews to bring them up to the Mishkan, where they should come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and realize that how important it is to go up to the Mishkan at that time on the Shalosh Regalim. So every year, Elkanah goes around and collects people and he has this whole entourage. He goes with Chana. Chana has no children. And he goes with his second wife, who, as you can imagine, is bringing the pack and plays and the toys and all the food and making sure that she has the squeeze up, whatever, you know, those squeeze up. They're so much more convenient than the baby food now that I had when, like, I first started having kids. The ones where you can, like, roll it up and it squeezes into your mouth. Very convenient. But she had a whole pack of them and she had to make sure she had chicken nuggets and everything that her kids would eat. And she's traveling and then Chana is going alone. And every year she goes up and it wasn't just that. People go, "Oh, what are you packing today?" And Chana would be like, "I'm packing my outfits." Oh, you're not bringing for your kids? You're right, you don't have kids. And so Penina said things in order to make Chana feel a little bit more broken so she would daven. She would mock her. And so Penina came up to the Mishkan as a broken woman. And she turns to And she turns, she's in the Mishkan, and she starts to daven to Hashem. And she starts begging for a child. And Eli, who is the Kohen, who's in charge of the Mishkan, looks at her and says, "You're drunk. You're talking to yourself." Now, talking to yourself nowadays is okay, because we all have our Bluetooths, and so everybody can assume that we're just talking on a cell phone that nobody can see. But in the old days, back before Bluetooth, that was a sign of like schizophrenia or drunkenness. So you wouldn't talk to yourself. So Eli sees her and says, "You're being drunk. Don't come into the Mishkan, not in complete control of your faculties." And so Chana says, "I'm not drunk, I'm just brokenhearted. I'm davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu." And she says, "Please give me a bracha that I should have a child who is going to be able to be a source of a source of goodness in this world and will serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu." And sure enough, she has a baby. She stays home to take care of him for 2 years. And 2 years later, she brings her son up to the Mishkan, where she is now going to give him to Eli to raise so that he can devote his life to serving in the Mishkan and serving Hashem. At that point, Chana turns to Hashem with the second tefillah. And this is the tefillah that we call Tefillas Chana. The Gemara tells us that this tefillah is the basis for our Rosh Hashanah davening. On most Yom Tovim, we have 7 brachos in Musaf, but on this Yantif, we have 9 brachos on Rosh Hashanah, because Hashem's name is mentioned 9 times in Rosh Hashanah's, in Chana's tefillah. It says that Sarah and Chana were both remembered on Rosh Hashanah, and that's why we discuss Chana on Rosh Hashanah. And finally, it says, the Yerushalmi says that Chana mentions that Hashem will judge the people on the earth, and so we mention Chana. So Chana is tied up. Chana's story is tied up for Rosh Hashanah. But if you look at the tefillah, it's a very strange tefillah. It's not a tefillah at all. She says 10 psukim. 7 of them or so are just praises of Hashem. And then she turns and says, "Please Hashem, bring Mashiach." That's her tefillah that those with the Nusach Sfard say, I believe, on a daily basis. They say this tefillah as the ideal tefillah. We base our entire Rosh Hashanah davening on this tefillah. And we read about her, and we read about Chana on Rosh Hashanah because of this tefillah. So why? What lesson are we supposed to learn? So I'm going to, in the next few minutes, go back to something from Esh Hayil. The way Esh Hayil is set up, as I said at the beginning, is that every pasuk in Esh Hayil has one woman corresponding to it. So when we learn the pasuk of Esh Hayil, we can understand the message of the woman from Tanakh. So the pasuk is Tama Kitov Sachra. What does this mean? It means she knows that her merchandise is good. The pshat of this pasuk is that the Esh Hayil recognizes that she has things to sell that are valuable. What this means on a deeper level is that the Esh Hayil recognizes that what she has is important, that what Hashem made her to be makes her special. It gives her a mission of who she can become. So each of us have character traits that are unique to us. I see some of us are English teachers, some of us do, and I'm not going to call out each person who I know their wonderful characters and what they devote to the community and to each other and to their families. But each of us, we know, contributes something very special to the world. And Esh Hayil tells us, Tam Kito Safra, you need to know what you contribute, what it is that you have to contribute, and you have to recognize that. Why is it important to recognize that? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has put us each into this world, and he gives us a mission. I'm going to read a little mashal from Sarah Yocheved Rigler. He says, after 6 months of working for a company, it's time for your evaluation. So you go in, and there are 3 businessmen sitting there giving your evaluation. And one of them says, "So I see that you didn't come into work at 9 o'clock a.m. at once during your whole time." And the second woman says, "I see that you're wearing a jeans instead of a suit and a tie." And the third says, "Our surveillance cameras show that you're not at your desk. You're only at your desk 10% of the time." And they look at you, and they say, "So what? Why should we keep you on?" And you look at them and you respond, "I was hired as the night watchman. So yes, I wasn't at my desk. I wasn't dressed in a suit and tie. I was only at my desk 10% of the time, but that was because that wasn't my job. My job was what was different than those expectations. So if we know, if we have gifts, it's because we were given them to use them. It's because we were given them to become who we were meant to become and not to become some ideal, you know, perfect little mold that's somehow other people would think is great. So when we have the gifts and we know them, we can say, Hashem, I've used my gifts, I've used my potential, and now please give me another year. So how did this work with Chana? Well, how does this teach us about Chana? So the pasuk tells us that on Chana, that for Chana, she saw she had a gift. And this is why we read about her in Rosh Hashanah. Tama kito sacha, zu Chana shetam tam tfila. Chana davened Hashem, and she recognized that it worked. She davened that she should have a child, and she had a child born. And so what did she do? Shenemar v'tespel el Chana v'tomar alath libi b'Hashem. And so she davened again, and she davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. L'fichach, therefore, zachsa v'yatzmi men ben, therefore she had a son, shaya ben zug l'moshe v'aron, who was equal to Moshe and Aaron in holiness, shayu me'irin l'Yisrael k'neros, that her son Shmuel became equivalent in his way to Aaron and Moshe, who were the greatest Nevi'im, and led Klal Yisrael in the Midbar. The Medrash tells us that Chana davened alath libi, and because of this she had a son Shmuel, who was equal. So she had that tefillah before, and because she recognized what the tefillah power was, she davened afterwards. And what did she include in that tefillah? She said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I am so grateful. I have so much emotions. Please, Hashem, I am asking you that you bring Mashiach. Hashem, you can do anything. Please make this world a better place to be. And what happened because of that? What happened because of that tefillah? Because of that tefillah, she had a son who was able to anoint Shaul and anoint David, who eventually brought Mashiach. So she was able to do it. Because she saw that she had a power of tefillah, she then was able to daven, and she was able to actually bring Mashiach with her tefillah. She was able to have her son actually achieve what she davened for. So that is a message, one of the messages about our potential. So we have from the Imahos that we set our sights on how high we can become. But now we need to know, Chizku v'imsu, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from us? He wants us to daven like Chana. A friend of mine many years ago was speaking before Rosh Hashanah, and it had a big impact on me, and I called her up before this shir, and I said, can you send me your notes? I want to hear, because I want to see what you said. And I want to share that over tonight when it was related to Chana. Chana said she had a maternal instinct. She had a drive to be a mother. And so she didn't leave that drive inside of herself. She took that drive, and she took it and she said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I have something that I want so deeply. I now recognize that I can take that emotion and connect it up to you. Just like I want to build a home, I want you to build a home. So every time she had an emotion, she then connected it to something far greater than herself. And so it was something that any woman can do. When she was davening that she should have children, it says, Midaberas Aliba, she was speaking to her heart. She wanted to nurse, the Mefarshim say. So she was saying, please give me the capacity that I should be able to nurse a child. And then the Pasuk says, but Midaberas Al Hashem also. And just like I want to nurture, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I know you want to nurture. So please bring Mashiach who will help you nurture the world with goodness. So this is the message of Chana on Rosh Hashanah, why we read about her. Tamo Kito Sachra, she recognized she had a power, and she used that power to bring Mashiach to the world, to have a child, to have a son who would bring goodness and connection to this world. So from ourselves, we too can look at Chana and we can say to ourselves, I have a power. I'm having an emotion. Right? Sometimes we stifle and we don't know what to do with our emotions. We have an emotion. We're feeling sad that my child is not doing well with his teacher. Okay, so daven for that. Say, I want my child to do well. Please help him connect with his Rebbe. And while you're at it, please help all of your children find a way back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's one extra little sentence. It's one little extra word. It's one little extra component to our tefillah. But it changed. But if we know the power that we have within ourselves, we will never let another Rosh Hashanah go by without taking that opportunity. We all have those emotions. We just need to channel them. We just did this. And when I say it, I think we'll all recognize this, that we, many of us have family. I don't personally have family. I have friends who live in Florida, right? And we just had the messages. They came out. There's a hurricane coming to Florida. And I know there were so many people who have parents who couldn't evacuate. I had two friends who drove through the night for 24 hours to evacuate. And we davened. There was Rabbi Heber sent out the message, and he said, please stay to Hillel for a half-hour slot for Florida. And what happened? So according to the news forecast, it said there was a headline, 20 miles may have made a $150 billion difference. Estimates for the damage Hurricane Irma would inflict on Florida kept mounting as it made its devastating sweep across the Caribbean. It was poised to be the costliest U.S. storm on record. Then something called the Bermuda High intervened and tripped it up. We got very lucky, said Jeff Masters. If Irma had passed 20 miles west of Marco Island instead of striking it on Sunday, the damage would have been astronomical. A track like that would have placed the powerful eastern eye wall on Florida's Gulf Coast. By one estimate, the total cost dropped to about $50 billion Monday from $200 billion over the weekend. So, was that just coincidence? Did the meteorologists all get that wrong? Or maybe there was a $200 billion storm coming, and we all stepped up to the plate. We all said, I don't want my parents to be hurt. Please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, make this storm not, just please do whatever you can. It would be a miracle, but please do it. And all of a sudden, this piece of geography that they knew and never knew about, the Bermuda High, who heard of that, saves everybody from $150 billion of damage. So that is our power. We have the power. If we look at another story that happened a few years ago, I think we can recognize that we do see this power happens frequently, that we can use it. There, a number of years ago, there were three boys, and this is, we all lived through it, who were kidnapped, and nobody knew what was going on with them. And the Israeli army started searching for them in the West Bank, and the parents went in the public and said, everybody, please join together to daven for my children. And if you remember Rachel Frankel and Mrs. Shar, I'm not sure, I don't remember the name of each of the three boys right now, but the mothers got on TV. They organized a rally of 100,000 people coming together to daven for their children to be found alive and to be brought back home. And the whole Klal Yisrael started davening. I was with my class in teaching third grade at the time, and we would say, the kids just wanted to say Tehillim. And we said Tehillim after Tehillim after Tehillim. And these mothers kept on encouraging all of us to daven for their children. I don't know if you remember this. It was very powerful. But these mothers, to the fact that they had the strength to just say, you can't do anything, please daven. And then, for whatever reason, they started sending missiles from Gaza into Israel. And Israel had no choice but to go in and retaliate. And they discovered this whole network of tunnels dug under Israel that they were planning to have a massive terror attack for on Israel on Rosh Hashanah. I remember that. And it was, wow, those mothers who stood up there and they said, I don't know what's going to be, but I have the power to bring Klal Yisrael closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I can do that at this moment. They were able to reach deep inside themselves. And Mrs. Frankel is an educator. She's a woman who teaches. And she took that koach of herself at that very stressful time in her life, and she transformed it to bring all of Klal Yisrael close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And look what the result was, how many thousands of lives were saved. So this Rosh Hashanah, Chizku V'imtzu, we can see our potential. We know the gifts we have. All we need to do is bring them to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can know the power of our tefillah, and with these two awarenesses of who we are, what our strengths are, and our potential is, we can help Klal Yisrael in ways that we never imagined. So tonight I began with three lessons. One was Masai Yagdu Masai Gamasei Avusai. When will I reach the potential? Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. They set us a vision of never embarrassing somebody else, having coming close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where do we get chizk uvi'imsu? How do we strengthen ourselves when our expectations of what we should do is so high? We just have to know that we have the power, we have the potential, we can do anything, we have emotions. And the fact that we have emotions is a gift because it allows us to change the world. And the final message that we got, that we had from Nitzavim, Parshas Nitzavim, was, Ki ha-mitzvah hi lo rechoka hi, ki b'pficha u'vavcha la'soso. It's not far from us, it's in our hearts and our minds to do it. We can achieve greatness with just who we are. We each have a life mission, and if we follow that mission, we can bring out our potential and it will help us come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Naftali Amsterdam said to his Rebbe, if only I had the head of the Shagas Aryeh, the heart of the Yesod V'Shorash Avoda, the Midos of my Rebbe, what could I achieve? And his Rebbe turned to him and said, with your heart, with your head, you can be Rav Naftali. Serve Hashem with your talents. And Hashem wants each of us to do our best. So if I don't start, we'll never finish. That's the message. We need to just start, and Hashem will continue us along the way. So there's one more story, and with that, I'm going to close. There's a story, a very famous story. Rabbi Simcham Bonum of Pshistcha. I didn't know it was from him, but I saw it quoted in his name. That there was a man named Rabbi Isaac, and he had a dream that he was living in Krakow, if he would go to Prague, that if he went to Prague, he would get to find a wonderful treasure. So he traveled all the way to Prague. And in Prague, he goes to the place that he saw in this dream. And there are a bunch of guards guarding this area. And they're walking back and forth. And he can't get close to it. So every day he comes and he stands looking longingly at this place, hoping against hope that one day he can go and dig in that spot for a treasure. And so he comes. And every day he's there. And finally, one of these guards who's supposed to be guarding it notices this strange man is doing surveillance on his area. So he goes to him and he says, excuse me, sir, why are you here? And he goes, well, I had this dream that I was supposed to dig in this location in Prague. And he said, listen, I also have a dream. You don't see me. Every night I have a dream. Go to Krakow. Go to the backyard of Rabbi Isaac. Go to his house. If you dig there, there's a treasure. Do you see me going to Krakow? I'm doing my job. I'm guarding this area. Please, sir, please leave. This is a private property. Please go back to where you came from. Thank you so much for visiting. So Rabbi Isaac hears this message, and he goes home, and he digs, and he finds a treasure in his own backyard. So what is the Nimshal? The Nimshal is that sometimes we go to someplace else to find out. We were looking, I need the treasure. The treasure's out there. I go to a shir to find the treasure. I go to a rav to find the treasure. I want to hear from somebody else. Where's this treasure? How will I get to tshuva? How will I get to Torah? And the answer is, we just need to dig within ourselves. We come out to a shir so that we know that when we go home, we can dig within ourselves and find what is valuable in our potential within ourselves. And that is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking for us. Just for us to dig within ourselves, find our strengths, find how we can improve every day a little bit in areas where which is possible, and we will find the treasure that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects from us. So with that, I end. Rak chizku v'imtzu. Strengthen yourselves. Be courageous. Al tarutsu. Don't be afraid. Ki Hashem imachem. Hashem is with us. Hashem wants what's best for us. And we should have a ksiva chziv matova and a meaningful Rosh Hashanah. Thank you.